Welcome to Eyewitness News. Current affairs at the click of a button.
Lively discussions.
International guests and views from around the world.
Eyewitness News, tackling the issues that matter to you. Assalamu alaikum, greetings and peace and welcome to the Eyewitness News podcast. On today, the 15th of May, we've got a packed studio and also mashallah, we're joined by a telephone guest. Before I get to our telephone guest, it's myself, Hamza, on the mic, and also to my right is Musab Hemsi. Assalamu alaikum, Musab.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
And on his right is Osama. Osama Said, our usual bag of wisdom. Assalamu alaikum, Osama.
Wa alaikum salam.
And just our usual bag on his right is brother Noman Dahi. Assalamu alaikum, Noman.
Assalamu alaikum.
I'm sorry about the introduction. I'm delighted. I mean, we're going to be talking about a lot of things. One being the French elections and what impact perhaps that had on Muslims in France and generally the population of France, and perhaps what implications it could have for foreign policy on a global scale. We'll also be talking about the Bush memo, or the supposed memo between Bush and Blair, and what happened. We're going to be talking about perhaps events in Pakistan as well. We'll try to cram in as much as we can in this segment. But let's get straight on to the French elections. And I'm joined by freelance journalist Sister Naima Boutalija. Hope I got that right. And she's also a researcher for the Transnational Institute. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Naima.
Assalamu alaikum. Hamza.
Thanks a lot for joining us on this podcast. I was going to ask straight into the French elections. It seemed that obviously it was very clear that there was a right-left split between Sarkozy and Ségolène. Can you tell us what was the Muslim opinion on the ground in France? Were they more willing and more supportive of Ségolène for her perhaps looser stance on immigration, or was it for Sarkozy perhaps for a stronger France?
First, like, there is no census in France or statistics based on like ethnicity or religious belonging, so it's very hard to assess.
Yeah.
I mean, who voted for who, for example. But I mean, it's quite clear though. There was one survey made by a Christian newspaper which shows that only 1% of Muslims in the first round voted for Sarkozy, and the hatred or hostility or of like not only Muslims but ethnic minorities in France towards Sarkozy is quite well known and enabled because of the language that he has been using in the past and because of the policies that he has been introducing. Having said that, I mean, socialists are, in terms of their policy to tackle discrimination in France, haven't been doing much over the last 10-20 years. So, of course, I think a lot of ethnic minorities, including Muslims, have been voting for Royal, but probably has the list of the two evils.
Okay.
I think I also heard in the first round a lot of a lot of Muslims were voting for Jean-Marie Le Pen, which I thought was astonishing.
No, that's only a myth. I mean, of course, you first, again, as I said before, there is no way you can assess that anyway. And there have been a few stories like that saying Muslims or Jewish people have been voting for Jean-Marie Le Pen. Of course, you will find a very, very tiny proportion of these people who will be maybe voting for Le Pen, but I think it's only a myth, and it's fed by like journalists who are running after sensationalist stories, but I don't think there is much truth in that. Yeah. I think it's it does happen, of course, but I think it's an extremely marginal phenomenon.
Yeah, well, I think it was good, I mean, especially from outsiders viewing it, that Jean-Marie Le Pen didn't make it this time into the second round. I think that was quite comforting for us across the border, to be honest, and I'm sure it was even more comforting for people in France, especially the Muslims and ethnic minorities. I was going to ask you, Sister Naima.
I just would like to come back on that. I don't think it's true at all. I think one of the reasons why Jean-Marie Le Pen did so bad in the first round, or he didn't do bad anyway, he did 10% of, he casted 10% of the vote, which is quite high anyway. But I think it's the main reason is because of the presence of Sarkozy, who has like managed to capture a lot of his electorate because of his statement on immigration and law and order. So seems to be a good sign, but actually, I mean, the predominance of far-right policies in French politics, in French mainstream politics, is still high over there.
No, what I was going to say, is that not maybe perhaps a worrying sign? Do you think that the extremes are now coming into the mainstream? Is one point I was going to ask, because Sarkozy especially seems very tough, and immigration is something, and anti-immigration feeling is something that's going across Western Europe, I think. And he was very strong. I think one of his quotes were, if immigrants don't like France, then they should leave. And that was in 2006. What does that mean for Muslims, especially those of Algerian, North African, Moroccan descent?
Sorry to have cut you then. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think, I mean, he has spoken a lot on, like, deporting people, and that's going to accelerate over the next years. I think also, like, he's going to make, he has already reduced when he was Minister of Interior for 4 to 5 years. Has reduced a lot asylum right, and he's going to make it nearly impossible for familial gathering. I think, I don't know if it's the legal term in English, but for people basically who are working in France and who are resident in France to bring their family over. I mean, he's going to impose a lot of very strict rules, who will make it very, very difficult. And basically, what he has been speaking about during his campaign and before is called that, like, chosen immigration, and it's basically an immigration which is strictly profitable economically for France, and which reduce a lot the human rights of foreign workers in France. Make it difficult basically for them to get specific rights and to get equal rights. Now, I mean, we are speaking about two different things. First, there is the law on immigration, which are targeting people who are not citizens in France. And then, I mean, the second, another part of the French population is very worried, and it's, like, as you say, French citizen of North African or even African, sub-Saharan African descent. And I think he has already introduced a record number of very tough
measures.
Law.
No, it's okay. You mentioned previously that he was interior minister before this, and he had quite a tough stance at the time. And I remember him saying, describing suburban youths as being scum. At that time, last year, previously, we had riots, etc. Do you think that now that Sarkozy is in power, they said there have been threats about violence and riots again? Do you think that's possible? Would that come across again?
I think it's. One thing first. I don't think, like, there has been riots not only because he called people scums. I mean, that was a very tiny part of the story. There were riots because he was extremely arrogant and he lied about the circumstances of the death of the two kids in November 2005. And when the police gassed a mosque it was during Lilat El Qadr. During Ramadan, he also lied and denied the police did it, and he was, like, arrogant, never for any apologized to the family or to the people, to the Muslims. Now, as you get to the threat of, like, kind of riots, I think that was, again, a bit of a play by the media. I mean, it didn't happen. There was, of course, like, some, like, kind of unrest on the night of his election, but mainly the actions of the far left in France, far left members who were just very unhappy and very rightly worried of his victory. I think, like, in the future, what he's going to do, he's an extremely clever politician and tactician, and I think what he's going to do is combine tough laws on law and order issues, but also he's going to try to co-opt, because he has done it in the past, some black Arabs and Muslim representatives. He's going to combine that, basically. So to answer to your question, there might be unrest in the future, but it's still a bit early to say.
Just very briefly, if I could ask you, you talked earlier about Sarkozy's tough stance on immigration, and with the sort of concept in Europe just now is moving more towards citizenship, and you mentioned that he's very in line with economic progress. Do you think there's a chance that he could alienate France from the rest of Europe?
If I could just adjoin that, is the debate in France worse than the UK when it comes to immigrant issues, and particularly the Muslim question as well?
I think it's. I mean, it's a good question, and it's not. Things are not as simple as they seem to be. Sometimes when you are abroad, or when you look at things from a distance, it's true that there is a very, very high level of discrimination toward the access of housing, for example, in the work market. But at the same, so you have that, and it's much, much stronger towards Muslims and toward black people in France than it is in the UK. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you come to immigration, and it's quite a paradox, you have, of course, a lot of debate in the mainstream, which are quite appalling, but not they're not worse than in this country. And what is also very different is that the solidarity is quite high in France when it comes to the deportation of to the opposition of the deportation, for example, of families or of kids who were born in France and who might be 3, 4, 5 and who are going to school in France, or even kids who are not born in France but who are going to school in France. There have been a quite strong movement in France against over the last 2 years and even before, I mean, with the movement of the sans-papiers, against basically the criminalization of migrant communities.
That's right.
And that is much more mainstream. This struggle is much more mainstream than it is in the UK.
Okay, Sister Naima, I'm going to move on to another topic that actually featured quite heavily during the election campaign, and that was of foreign policy, and particularly the stance taken towards America. It seemed that the majority of France agreed with Jacques Chirac's stance to oppose, or certainly voice dissent over the war in Iraq. And it seemed to us both the left and the right were looking to perhaps build upon that and actually not change that stance. But can you tell us more about Sarkozy's attitude towards America and what you think he'll do globally?
The election of Sarkozy definitely opened a new political era when it come in particular to foreign policy, and the vast majority of French commentators agree that if we had had Sarkozy a few years ago instead of Chirac as a president, France would have probably gone to war in Iraq.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, Sarkozy is probably the most pro-American president that we ever had since, 1945 or even maybe probably earlier. Mm-hmm. And it is, true that there will be a significant change in the French foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And in the Middle East in particular. But again, I mean, that needs to be slightly relativized with the fact that, I mean, France, for example, has been, joined the coalition in Afghanistan. And also, for example, if you look at the policy, that's something which is not very known, but if you look at the policy of France in many African countries which are former colonies, there is not much difference there between what the U.S. is doing in the Middle East and what France is doing in many African countries. So there will be a significant change, in particular towards his policy, in the Middle East. He's very, very pro-American and very pro-Israeli. I mean, he's known a couple of years ago, yeah, he was in the U.S. and he said that in France, some people call me Sarkozy the American, and I'm very proud of that. But, yeah.
Okay, do you think this will also affect, because France is always seen as perhaps one of the European countries that has come out and criticised Israel in the past, mm-hmm, especially the Middle East conflict. Do you also see that be affected as well from Sarkozy's position?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear.
Yeah, okay, well, it'll be interesting to watch. And I think finally, just to ask, something that's, again, is very kind of unique to, not unique, but especially emphasised in France, is the idea of secularism and how strong it is, separating religion and the state. And of course, we've seen that effect on Muslim sisters in France with the hijab ban and schools and so on. Was there any hint of that changing from either candidate during the election, or are they quite happy? Are they really, really proud of the secularism? And is there going to be even more tougher measures, do you think, introduced?
Okay, as we got to the ban on the hijab, there is pretty much a consensus on that in the within the mainstream political party in France, to the exception of the party of the far left. And if just to take an example, you were speaking about Royal, Ségolène Royal, the candidate of the Socialist Party. I mean, in I think it was in June 2006, they introduced a bill in the parliament, which was not voted yet, but to ban hijab not only at school, that's already done, but to ban it in all public places. Mm-hmm. And that's like come from the socialists. So in terms of like, I don't think there will be a change at all.
Very much consensus. Mm.
But it's important, again, to understand that secularism is just a smokescreen. I mean, the fact that you had like 1,000 girls were wearing the hijab at school was not at all, didn't contradict at all secular beliefs, secular kind of laws in France. Yeah. And it has to be seen as, I mean, for me, like, it's more linked to Islamophobia and discrimination towards Muslims than to the defense of secularism.
Absolutely. And again, like I've said before, it's worrying that that trend actually is being seen across Western Europe, from the Netherlands and to an extent being seen in Britain. And, well, obviously we'll be keeping an eye on it here in the Eyewitness News studio. So Jazakallah Khair, Sister Naima, for joining us. We know you've got precious time. And thank you for informing us more about the French elections. Jazakallah Khair for coming on.
Assalamualaikum. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi
wabarakatuh. And now, Osama, tell us a bit more about dodgy leaked memos and people breaching the Official Secrets Act.
Yeah, well, there was a court case last week where two men, Leo O'Connor and David Koo, were jailed for 3 months and 6 months, respectively, for breaching the Official Secrets Act. Now, what they did is they leaked a government document, and were not allowed to talk about why they what that document was. Such were the reporting restrictions. There was a phenomenal amount of reporting restrictions around this trial, but we can talk about it separately. So listeners may want to talk listen into the next segment after we finish talking about this court case. But interestingly, they got 3 and 6 months respectively. They passed this document on to Peter Kilfoyle, the Labour MP. Peter Kilfoyle is not facing any jail sentence, because obviously that would harness quite a bit more publicity for the whole thing. But he did exactly the same thing as the both Leo and David did as well. So you know, that's a court case, and maybe we can now move on
so
to
what's the contention about the memo? Why? What memo are we talking about?
The Al Jazeera memo. Yes. Now this is the reportedly a minute of a meeting that took place between George Bush and Tony Blair in 2004, where George Bush is said to have wanted to bomb Al Jazeera. And it's not exactly clear what Mr. Blair's response to this was, though as we know, Al Jazeera was bombed in Iraq during the Iraq conflict, and Bush was just apoplectic about the coverage that Al Jazeera was putting out about the things that were going on in Iraq. This is as serious as it gets. I mean, this is you know, a huge, monstrous crime. If there was any hint that this thing was all pre-planned, and remember, we're always told that whenever Al Jazeera get bombed in Afghanistan or Iraq, wherever, it's always an accident. Even though in Iraq they deliberately gave the coordinates of their office to the Americans before the bombing to avoid such a scenario again, but lo and behold, they're bombed anyway.
Talk about supplying your information to the enemy, right? Here's our coordinates.
Yeah, so that's the situation. And you know, there was a report on Martin Bright's blog, which was interesting, that the government had sorted out their line in regard to this memo, that they were going to deny that there was any talk of bombing Al Jazeera and say it just didn't happen because Bush talked about throwing a missile at Al Jazeera. You know, that's the level of spin we're at now. Okay. But that's reporting. I thought that was very interesting and very indicative, actually, of all the Blair years.
Well, I mean, what does this say, Osama, about the kind of whole way the conflict's been fought out? The fact that if it was any other country bombing invading any other country and then attacking the media offices, the press offices, freedom of the press is one of the most fundamental rights of a democracy. It just shows that there's no regard for it whatsoever. I mean, would it be fair to say that from this?
Yeah, I think this is the start of something. I hope it's the start of something because, you know, notwithstanding the reporting restrictions, I think all media outlets have to take this very seriously. This is, I mean, imagine, you know, there was you know, a country out there, you know, planning on bombing the BBC. You know, what would the BBC do? And that's what we have as an exact parallel. And it's incumbent now on all people involved in the media and all responsible citizens, really, to root out the truth of this and get to the bottom of it, because, you know, it's just terrible.
Absolutely. Okay, Noman, we've been hearing a lot of activity happening in Pakistan from recently, a lot of riots by lawyers. I'm not surprising, man. There's people rioting against lawyers, but I know there's been a lot of rioting to do with the judge, Iftikhar Chaudhry, and also a bomb explosion today. And in between, there's also been a strike in Hyderabad, shutting down the city's, shutting down the city, basically, which is the main. Tell us what's been happening in that area.
To say Pakistan's in turmoil would be an understatement, because this has been going on. There's two separate issues. There's one of terrorism, and there is the one with Chief Justice Iftikhar Chaudhry. The issue with terrorism has been going on for roughly a year now. Well, it has been brewing, and now we've had more and more suicide attacks and terrorist attacks within Pakistan. Over the past year, we've had it in Sialkot, Multan, Peshawar, Islamabad, all over the place. And there was one today in Peshawar, and that killed, I think it was roughly 30 people, they were saying. And that this has just been... It's been brewing for a while now, because a number of organisations and groups have been just criticising General Pervez Musharraf's leadership of the country, and basically his Puri-like relationship with America and George Bush, saying going along with everything that he says or does. And it's really escalating now with the fact that there's a lot more prominent groups with that, which have a lot of influence within Pakistan, who are coming out and they're strongly criticising and taking part in these sort of atrocities. And over the past week, I think it was about 46 people died due to riots in Karachi, where he was supposed to be attending. So it really is, and even incidentally, the government is thinking about introducing martial law.
Well, they've already banned groups, political meetings of any sort taking place in Karachi and in certain other areas as well. And the question I wanted to put to you was, it seems evident that there's some kind of conflict between Islamic Republic of Pakistan and the secular Musharraf, or the secularism that Musharraf is introducing. Do you think that's part of the problem, that you're getting this pull between the religious sections of a community and those who want to, perhaps you could say, progress or modernise Pakistan, or certainly secularise it? Is that what's causing part of the problem, especially in places like Peshawar, Pathan, which are seen as more Islamic, and other areas perhaps like Karachi?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, firstly, when I came back from Pakistan just recently, the main feeling that I got there was people were becoming extremely disillusioned, not only because of the Iraq war, not only because of the treatment of Palestinians in Afghanistan, the situation in Afghanistan as well, but also the sense of feeling there that India's following America and Pakistan seems to be following India. It's a whole load of things. It's the TV, it's the sort of things that are going on generally, and people are becoming more and more politicised. People are becoming looking at the situation thinking, we're not really, why are certain things happening? Why are we following America this way? There's a lot of anti-American sentiment there. So I think the thing with President Musharraf is as well, I think there's a lot of issues that we have to take into account, because even that we were talking about, we've been talking about leaks and that sort of thing before, and there was that whole thing where one of George Bush's aides said that if Pakistan didn't follow or comply with America, they'd bomb them back to the Stone Ages. So these are things that obviously he's had to look into. And I think it's caused a big drift in there. There's people that are going towards the Islamic side, and there's other laws that have been introduced in terms of rape laws. Previously, I don't know if you've heard about this. It was I don't know the exact gist of it, but it was something like you needed to have like 8 or 5 male witnesses before you could take it to the court, or something like that. And he's banned that law now. He's changed that around as well. And you know, you've got the Islamic scholars or the leaders of those parties completely against him.
And of course, you've seen bombings of madrasas as well, which is a big thing, a lot of these are actual schools of education, mm-hmm. innocent people losing their lives as well. So, I mean, in your opinion, Noman Danis, or Nostradamus, I should say, man, can Musharraf survive this crisis? Because this is something that we've seen topple many presidents in the past.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that people have been saying, that he might have to maybe relinquish some of his powers or try to work with the opposition, in terms of, because as we know, Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif aren't allowed into the country. They're in exile. So there's a lot of those two parties have a lot of support throughout Pakistan. So there's been reports of saying maybe he can maybe work a deal with them, or you know, try to relinquish some of these powers and try to change things around. But it's taken to another level now with the sort of violence that we're seeing, the terrain, and he's under extreme pressure. So we'll have to wait and see. Really, Pakistan, the situation in Pakistan, it's not easy to judge. It's not over here. You think about coalitions and you think about this, that, or the other. It really is. Only time will tell.
That's not something that the bookies will be taking.
No, not at all.
Well, it's interesting to see the kind of tension between secularism and Islam, and I guess a link to that would be what's happening in Turkey. We've seen secularism there for over 70 years, and Osama, it seems that Turkey really wants to emphasise that.
Yep, very very slick link up there, Hamza. Kudos. Just to recap the situation, Abdullah Gul had to stand down for his candidacy to be the next president of Turkey because of his alleged Islamist links, and this is despite the party that he represents, the Justice Party, having, you know, over the last couple of years they've been in government, they've led an extremely moderate line. You know, there's no doubt that they're Islamically inclined, but that hasn't led to a trampling on people's rights the way that the secular agenda has in Turkey, and indeed as we're seeing across the world. And there's a lot made, for example, of Tayyip Erdogan, the Prime Minister's wife, and the fact that she wears a hijab. And it was astonishing to see pictures in the blogosphere this week of the king of secularism, the hero of all secularists, and indeed Musharraf's hero, Kemal Ataturk, pictures of him and his wife clad in hijab. Absolutely astonishing to see that. And you know, he caused a lot of damage himself, but his so-called followers aren't even have gone an extra length in their fixation on what women wear on their heads. And for me, it represents something deeper in the ideology of secularism, where it seems to be incapable of living in coexistence with people of different faiths. And there's no doubt that secularism in is itself a meaning system and faith as strong as any religions itself. And I think it's really incumbent, and you know, it's always put on Muslims to disown what's happening abroad. I think secularists should be put on the back foot about this in this country, actually, and said that in your name, this is going on in Turkey, it's going on in other countries in the world, people's rights have been trampled on, and it's high time they spoke out and said that they are for freedom. And I think that's what everyone should coalesce about, that people should have the freedom to believe and say and think whatever they want, you know, regardless of whatever else that conflicts with.
Just a quick final comment from you, Osama. Why do you think Turkey and other countries are so inclined to hold on to the secularism, when you yourself mentioned that perhaps it's trampling the rights more than other regimes have in the past? What is it that appeals to them about secularism? And maybe in Turkey's case, has it got anything to do with the accession or the proposed accession into the European
EU,
Union?
Yeah.
I don't think it has. For Turkey, it's been a long-standing thing, and it's just a misreading of what goes on in the West. I think there's rightly a lot of admiration about the way that the West runs government and so on, and there's a desire to copy that, but it's taking it on in excess. I mean, we in Britain don't. It's heading that way, unfortunately. But you know, when we talk about secularism, we're not trampling on people's individual freedoms, individual rights. And unfortunately, such is the authoritarianism and the lack of checks and balances, and the fact that the army controls Pakistan and the army controls what's going on in Turkey, that you just end up with a really shabby form of the way life should be.
Yeah, well, okay, and on that note we'll finish. Jazakallah khair to Musab Osama Numan in the studio and Sister Naima Boutaleja for joining us over the phone to talk about the French elections. And of course, the Eyewitness crew will be back next week dissecting what's been happening in the news. So from all of us, assalamu alaikum, greetings and peace.